Welcome back to the Monthly Alts Pulse. I'm Michael Sidgemore, co-founder and partner of Broadhaven Ventures and founder of the Altcos Mainstream podcast. I'm here with Lawrence Calcano, chairman and CEO of iCapital. Welcome back.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
How are you?
I'm good. Good. Crazy busy, but good.
Crazy busy. It feels like that time.
The world, I think, is really reigniting, and we're really seeing continued interest in alts and I think really a growing interest.
What is the cause of that? Is that equity markets? Is that just there's a certain time and place in private markets where you feel like the dam is broken and we've kind of gotten to that next phase?
I think there's just confidence. I think people are more confident than they might have been last year. So we're seeing an acceleration, increased interest in subscribing to a broader range of products. We talked a lot about credit being a big product last year and into early this year, and it continues to be a very important product kind of in the scheme of the advisor's interest set. But I think people are also now really thinking about other types of strategies as well.
Is that driven by the LP side or the GP side?
Well, I think it's really the LP that is expressing a preference. And, you know, you're seeing that in the fundraisers. Last year, fundraisers were taking longer, generally speaking. And while I don't think it's back to where it was in 21, there's definitely more LP interest in the broader set of products, as I said. And again, I think that really relates to confidence that people have broadly about the economy and maybe their financial position as well.
Well, the reason why I asked that question was because we're seeing a lot of innovation with what GPs are doing with the way in which they're creating products for the wealth channel. A few examples, Blackstone, BXPE, that raised over $1 billion, seemed very successful. They obviously have similar products in credit, real estate, et cetera. KKR, K-Fund series, different ways of creating structures to enable the wealth channel to invest into private markets. So that's part of why I was asking that question. That's really where I want to start here is talking about product innovation in private markets. You said something on the last episode that I thought was really interesting, which was that the death of feeders is greatly exaggerated, but we've also moved beyond feeder funds. So I want to start with what you said and then move beyond.
I think the reality is for a lot of products, feeder is a great way for people to get access that they would not have had historically. But even in the context of iCapital, our business is much larger on the accredited side, the direct side, than it is on the feeder side, which is still big, but the business has grown very substantially. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. Probably most importantly, people want to have access for all their clients, including their accredited investors. Typically, feeder funds are built only for qualified purchasers. And so that inherently creates haves and have-nots. And most thoughtful advisors are trying to figure out how to provide alternative access to all of their clients for whom these products are suitable and so forth. And so I think a lot of what's driving the increase in the registered products, whether they're private equity-oriented, credit, et cetera, is really the ability to access all of the different types of investors. And I think that trend's going to really continue.
These registered products or evergreen products have different liquidity features and different ways in which they're structured. They're not closed-end vehicles. There are just different ways in which the investor can interact with them. How much of the excitement and interest in these evergreen or registered products is really around the feature of different types of liquidity than maybe a more traditional closed-end private equity or private credit?
I want to actually, before I answer it, go back to one of the foundational comments you made at the beginning, which is that a lot of the GPs are being more creative. And I think it's worth pointing out, A, I agree with you, and they're being incredibly creative. And I think there's a lot of GPs that are really being thoughtful about structures. And I contrast that to maybe in 14, 15, 16, when really very few people were doing anything creative as it relates to building products directly targeted to high net worth investors. Everything was institutional in nature, and products were basically derivatives of the institutional products that they had great success selling. And now I think you're seeing really all the large GPs and many GPs being very thoughtful about creating structures that are actually really targeted to this market. And we said this then, and I'll say it again, if you want to cater to a client set, you have to think about their needs when you're building your own products and services. And I think that's happening now. And I think that's really going to continue to help this market scale and grow.
Many of the large firms have been able to do that. They've created these products and they have, in some sense, the infrastructure in-house and also partnering with firms to handle that. What about firms who are maybe slightly smaller than the, not just to name a few names, but for context, the Blackstones, Apollos, KKRs, Carlyles, et cetera. What about the next stage of managers? How do they create those types of products to work with the wealth channel that a larger firm can do?
I think we're way past that. When I think about our roster, there are almost 600 GPs that are part of our mix. And obviously, by definition, we're way past the handful of names that you've talked about. And I think I may have mentioned this. I think there are several firms that have over 100 people dedicated to this channel and a bunch more that are more than 50, more than 75. So a lot of firms are now making the investment that they need to make in this channel. And they're thinking about all the different product types, whether it's in some cases making their funds available, even if it's in a feeder, but making it available for the first time to high net worth investors, as well as, you were asking earlier, building products really focused on the accredited marketplace with either BDCs, interval funds, et cetera.
Do you think that there's going to be a shift in how the wealth channel wants to access private markets, i.e., will they look to the new products that are being created, these registered products, BDCs, evergreen funds, as opposed to other types of products, whether they're QP or not?
I think you have to be prepared for people to either want to invest in or structure and sell products in all different types of wrappers and structures and so forth. And so as we look forward, we expect that there will be continued interest in all of these evergreen products we're talking about across all the different strategies. We think there will continue to be large flagship feeders that are built for qualified purchasers. And we think there are going to be other structures as well. We're working on a lot of things that, as you think about the evolution of markets, and in particular alts, we're well beyond the early adopters, who are the advisors who were very early into private equity at the start, now into all the different products. We're into a phase of the market where there are lots of advisors that are trying to solve, how do I get access to alternatives for my client base? And there's lots of different ways people are to think about it, including model portfolios. So if you think about the paradigm that grew other financial markets, ETFs, model portfolios, SMAs, all of that, I think people are going to visit all the different types of ways in which they can create structures for advisors and clients to help them grow and scale. And I think that's just a very healthy process. In the future, these QP products that we've been building around the closed-end fund don't necessarily have to go into a feeder. So for a number of GPs, one of the services we're offering is basically all the services we offer around a feeder, just in a direct context. So if the back offices or middle offices of the GPs aren't billed to take $100,000 tickets and so forth, we can provide all the same services and manage all these investors that then go directly, but just not through a feeder. And we can deal with all the IR, capital calls, distributions, all the things that we typically deal with in a feeder, but we can do it directly. So that provides yet another option for people to potentially invest.
What are you seeing as some of the challenges that GPs are facing when thinking about how they productize for the wealth channel?
First of all, they want to make sure the infrastructure's there. They want to make sure that their products are being offered in the right structures to the right investors and advisors. I think everyone's focused on scale. How do we scale this? And how do we scale it in the context of what you might have as an infrastructure already in terms of front, middle, and back office? And I do think one of the really important things is making sure if you're going to embrace this channel, you need to be ready to embrace it in a scaled way. Having the infrastructure to be able to do this, whether it's through a partnership with iCapital or in some other capacity in terms of what you might build, but making sure you have the ability to scale a broad offering to advisors, I think that's really, really important from a GP's perspective.
So when you think about this evolution and expansion of the way in which GPs are able to work with the wealth channel, I want to touch on evergreens.
Yeah.
Sure. So let's go a little bit deeper there into the forest. So when you think about evergreens, there's a different structure that enables the wealth client to access this product. They can continue to raise capital over periods of time. And that also provides elements of the product structure that actually help the GP do their business. Blackstone was profiled in a Forbes article and talked about this, how they're actually winning private equity deals because they can partner with families in some cases and say, hey, we're not going to sell, just like we would have to in a 12-year closed-end private equity fund vehicle. What do you think about that aspect of evergreens when it not just comes to working with the wealth channel and this being a new product innovation, but also what this means for the broader industry in terms of how private equity as a business is done.
I don't want to conflate the things because they're different. One of which is the evergreen structure in terms of how do we build something that we can sell to accredited. And the second is more of an investment question. How do we invest and what is the duration of that investment? Historically, the duration of the investment was you had a 5-year investment period and you had a 10-year with a couple of extensions life. And so your hold period is 3 to 5 years. But now we're seeing and have been seeing for years, GPs looking at some of their investments and saying, there's a lot of room for continued growth and success of this company. And I don't want to exit just because my fund life is 10 years. And so we're seeing technology and innovation there as well, these continuation funds and the ability for a GP and maybe with some additional GPs to join, but the ability to continue to hold that investment. And I think that is a continuing trend. Obviously, the godfather of all this is Warren Buffett with really long-term investment cycles. And I think there's a lot of people in the GP population, the private equity population, that really want to make sure they have the ability to continue to hold great investments. So I think we'll continue to see that. At the same time, we're going to continue to see these evergreen structures grow and I think prosper in the market.
I want to talk a little bit about kind of how the product innovation relates to user experience in this space. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, I think that is a big part of the user experience. By the way, we've talked about this. We're a B2B company and we work with advisors because we think the odds of investors having a successful outcome just goes up if they're working with an advisor. And I think one of the important elements of it is making sure that the investor really understands what's happening, how these products work. Is there a capital call sequence over 3 to 5 years? Is it all funded up front? And I think when you sell directly to consumers, they may or may not really understand that versus certainly your more sophisticated clients will understand that, but maybe not everybody. Whereas when you're working with an advisor, you've got the benefit of someone who really understands the investor and you can work with to make sure that the investor understands all the idiosyncrasies of the products and so forth. But there's definitely a planning process that the advisor will work carefully with the client on and making sure that money is being managed correctly, knowing that there are capital calls coming down the road.
From all the innovation that you're seeing right now, as well as what clients really need, like you just mentioned, what do you think is the next phase of product innovation? What's missing from what the wealth channel has access to or the way in which they access
private markets? Well, I think we've made a lot of progress. I think we have to continue to provide tools and education. And everybody has to be a party to that. Like all the GPs that are looking to access this channel have to be part of the educational solution as well. And then it's building the tools that extend that education. Like Architect, we've talked about helping people actually build the portfolios that make sense for individual clients. So I think that continues to be really important. So can I access all the different types of products that help me build a diversified, thoughtful portfolio? Do I have a set of tools to understand how to do that? And do I have reporting and capabilities on the back end? So once I've made these investments, do I understand if there are capital calls coming, what does that look like? What's the return on the piece I've already committed? And generally, what is happening with my investment after I've made it? All of that contributes to a great user experience or a bad one if you're not doing a good job on any of those components.
It's interesting. When I listen to you talk about this, I think back 10, 11 years ago, Blackstone didn't have any assets for the most part in the wealth channel. Neither did any of the others. Most people were just talking about like, what is private equity? How do you get it into a client's portfolio? It doesn't even make sense. You have to convince them on that. Now we're talking about product structures, various ways in which people can access private markets, talking about all the pieces around user experience. We have trillions of dollars that have gone into private markets from the wealth channel now. What inning are we in private markets? Because we've come a long way.
Yeah.
But
we're still very much in the early innings. So on one level, you say, wow, trillions of dollars have been committed. And that's a lot. But when you think about it, and I'll cite a BCG study from last year that said there's 125, 130 $1 trillion owned by high net worth investors or by individual investors. And that's growing at anywhere from 4 to 6%, depending upon whose study you're looking at. So there's a massive pool of funds owned by individuals that is still, even at a couple of trillion dollars, sort of fairly underallocated to alternatives. So I think we're in the really early innings, and I think all of this product innovation driven by GPs, firms like ours, all that's healthy as long as people do so in the context of educating advisors and playing the long game. I look at this market and I say, everyone is in a hurry and rushing, and that's great on one hand. On the other hand, this will grow over time, and it is in nobody's interest to have a lot of people start buying things they don't really understand. That's when you get train wrecks. So everybody has to have, I think, a long-term patient mentality and understand that education is going to take pace at its natural pace of progress. And seeing the allocations grow in that context will create a healthier environment. Still in the early innings, and it'll still end up, I think, in a big place. But I think the odds of an accident happening just go way down if it's a longer-term process.
It's funny, when you say this, I kind of think back to the early years. You used to say this a lot in meetings, when we both within the company, but also with people in the wealth channel, which is like, there's, I paraphrase your quote, it was like, there's no new institutional LP that's being created. There's no new big pension fund that's being created. So therefore, the wealth channel is going to be this new institutional LP. So like, we look at how far we've come in 10 years, but it took 10 years, right? And I guess the question for you there is, does this, in your mind, mean that the wealth channel is, to some extent, the new institutional LP?
I'm sure institutional investors will have their view of that question, as will high net worth. I think they're just a different set of investors. And I think they have similar but different needs. I say similar because institutions have been investing in these assets for a long time because they have long-dated liabilities, and they need an asset class that's going to compound and grow at a higher rate over many years. And the reality is, we as individuals have similar needs. We're saving for retirement. We're saving to put our kids through college. We're saving for any number of long-dated obligations that we may have as people. And so we too, therefore, need to have the benefit of all the products that can help us achieve our financial goals, diversify our portfolios, and so forth. But we have different set of constraints that CalPERS might have. And so these products have to be built with that in mind also. And so I think it gets back to building products that uniquely address the individual needs that we all have as people.
You went there, so I'm going to have to, which is, when are 401ks going to have private equity or private markets products in them?
Yeah, look, I think it will happen. It will happen with a lot of thoughtfulness. It'll happen, I think, recognizing that some portion of that money can be illiquid. People need to understand, as we've talked about, these are illiquid assets, but some portion of that money can be illiquid, I think, without endangering any of the underlying recipients or constituents. I think it'll have to play its course out. There's a lot of people thinking about it and working on it, but I think that will be in the future, that will happen.
It sounds like we really have to play the long game, both in the context of how we think about product innovation, new ways in which the wealth channel will invest into private markets. So before we go, I have to ask, as usual, what's your your latest monthly quote?
It's funny, in the context of thinking about all this growth and so forth, I'm reminded of the Yogi Berra comment, which is, I knew the record would stand until it was broken, which is one of his hysterical quotes.
So it sounds like we might see some fundraising records being broken over time.
Yeah.
It's hard not to think that this space is just going to continue to grow. Sure, there's going to be ups and downs, but when you think about everything that we just discussed, when you talk about things like new products, evergreen structures, 401ks, if and when that happens, it sounds like these records are going to be broken.
I suspect they will be, yes.
It's great to hear.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for watching this episode. Michael Sidgemore here with Lawrence Calcano. See you next time on the Monthly Alts Pulse.